Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy. You're winning too much.
I'm a man. I am an anchor man. I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I found myself hurting from giving too much.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Mark Reardon, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome to this guy.
On KMOX.
It's go time. It's go time time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see him when I see it, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
All right, sorry. Carol and I were talking a little bit about Black Panther. We saw it last night. I'm pretty sure I'm not allowed to say a whole lot. When I say things like that, it's because what the movie studios do is they lay down these rules that say you can't talk about the movie. You can say good things about it. You can't say bad things about it, because then they'll clip you. I don't even know if they'd ever come in and do anything, but because I'm afforded the privilege of seeing the movies before they're released, I'll say this. One thing, and I said this on Twitter earlier, I don't think it really matches the hype. There's a lot of hype about Black Panther, and most of the reviews out there have been glowing. So sometimes you're at a disadvantage. You see a movie after that. I think a lot of you run into that with some of the Oscar contenders and the award set movies. You hear all these great things about it. It's the best movie of the year. It's amazing. You know, this will change your life forever. And then you go and you sit in the theater and say, what in the world is going on with the numbskull critics? And with Black Panther, I think it's extremely entertaining, very good, solid comic book movie. But I'm seeing some of the things, and this happens, by the way. You see, it's the best Marvel movie of all time. There's no reason to make any other Marvel movies. Let's dial down that just a little bit and go in with realistic expectations when you see it this weekend. I mean, that movie is tracking with amazing numbers. Like, it might hit $165 million just for this weekend. Now, it's a holiday weekend, and that always helps, but wow, that's a big number for Hollywood, and it would help them get off to a good year. Good start this year. All right, where do I start this afternoon? You know you're desperate for material in the national news when you're depending on Omarosa to provide probably the most interesting political commentary going out there right now.
Can I just say this? As bad as y'all think Trump is, you would be worried about Pence. I'm just going to say that.
I know.
So everybody that's wishing for impeachment might want to reconsider their life.
Absolutely.
We would be begging for days of Trump back if Pence became president. That's all I'm saying.
He's extreme. I'm Christian. I love Jesus. But he thinks Jesus tells him to say things that are like, I'm like, Jesus, I say that.
So, I don't know. I guess that Big Brother, CBS is milking that, right? Brilliant casting of Omarosa in Big Brother, from reality show to reality White House to reality show. Hey, you know who else is in the news today? I don't know if you, and I apologize because I missed the newscast, but Nelly's in the news. Dave, do you know if Carol had that in the newscast? So this is we might be vetting this a little bit. But TMZ is reporting that Nelly is being criminally investigated for sexual assault in England. It allegedly happened on December 5th after Nelly's performance at Cliff's Pavilion in Essex. The accuser says she went to take a picture with Nelly. She says he placed his arm tightly behind her and asked if she could stay behind to talk to him. They went to the dressing room with her friend. She says that he then asked her to come to a room next door. She claims once in the room, he dropped his pants and began doing the old who was that? Wasn't Charlie Rose? That who was the one that was playing with their particular privates when they were in front of the women? Was that Weinstein or was that Charlie Rose? There was somebody else that we're not thinking. Oh, Louis C.K. That's who it was. It's hard to keep the celebrity penises in order these days. I'm telling you. The woman says Nelly put his right hand on the back of her head, his left hand on her shoulder, forced her head down, pushing his, into her mouth. She ran out of the room, called. Ooh, this is a new one. Apparently, she ran out of the room, and he called her a... It's not a nice word. Starts with a C. The woman says she didn't go to cops immediately because she didn't think she'd be believed. Essex police told cops they have begun a sexual assault investigation. Here's a shocker. You want to know who Nelly's attorney is? What'd you say, Dave? Of course it's Rosenblum, right? Nelly's attorney, Scott Rosenblum, tells us these allegations arose after Ms. Green amended her suit for money to include a reference to these claims. The fact that the police are investigating these claims is not new information, and Nelly welcomes thorough investigation. Nelly is confident that once investigated, these claims will be determined to be disingenuous. I'm always a little suspicious on things like this. I guess I'm suspicious about a lot of it, just because I'm a firm believer in the fact that there are two sides to every story. And I'm not saying that the women, for example, well, let me throw one line in here about Nelly. He was, Rosenblum says he was accompanied by his girlfriend during the tour, and she was at his side throughout. It's important that police investigate every allegation of this nature. But look, you do have a lot of people that are looking for paychecks these days. And I want to go back to Rob Porter for just a moment. And I think that the things that his ex-wives are accusing him of are horrific. And I don't know if they're true or not. They certainly say, I would tend to believe the women with allegations like that. And then we've had some pictures of black eyes and those things. But let me just say this. This will be tough and tricky, and I'm sure I'll get hate email. I will say that there are things that happen in the course of relationships that they're not pretty. You'd never want them to be seen in public. You have arguments. Hopefully there's no physical altercation. I can honestly say this. The only time in my life, now, like, say this, and I don't know if this is 100% true. I'd have to harken back to a lot of memories, which I do not have because I killed a lot of brain cells. But I do remember from one of my girlfriends that I had when I was in college that the only time I ever, and this wasn't hitting or striking a woman, it was pushing a girlfriend back because she was so intoxicated, she was coming at me with her purse and beating me on the head with her purse. Now, I may have probably deserved it. I don't remember. But there was a situation, I think about this every once in a while, because I pushed her back. I just remember that. I mean, these are things that happen, like I said, in relationships. I don't know what might have happened. Certainly, there's nothing that would justify popping a woman in the face or the eye or anything like that. But I do think that sometimes in the course of things, and maybe Rob Porter might not be the best example of this because I don't know the whole story, that there always are different sides to these stories. Even with the Matt Lauer situation, I've said this from the very beginning, I'm suspicious about a lot of the things that were said about some of the other folks involved here as well. And then you wonder, and the president's gotten himself in trouble along these lines because he seemingly has sided only with his former employee and public servant Rob Porter, not with the women, but you start to wonder if there is the ability ever for someone to combat allegations and serious allegations like this. I think that there probably are a lot of powerful, maybe not even men who aren't powerful, who think, I mean, it would not take too much to bring someone down with allegations, whether they're true or not. Of course, by the time they're investigated, by the time they're vetted, the Nelly situation might be an example of this. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he did this. Could have done it. Would not be unheard of for a rock star, a musician, or a rap star to behave that way. However, it just always makes me a little leery in stories like this. We'll come back. We're going to talk about a bunch of things here this afternoon. We have State Rep David Gregory. Remember when he was hosting Meet the Press? That guy was awesome. Oh, wait, what? It's a different guy? It is? Told it's a different David Gregory. Who knew? State Rep David Gregory, he actually took it upon himself to look at the state budget and found a bunch of things that we're wasting money on. No shocker there. He's going to join me in a couple of minutes. I'm not familiar with him. He's from the South County area. Also, this The situation with police corruption in Baltimore is quite fascinating. We're going to talk about that this afternoon and a whole lot more. We'll fit some phone calls in eventually. That's all coming up here on The Mark Reardon Show on KMOX.
News at the top and bottom of the hour. Mornings and afternoons. KMOX.
All right, welcome back. One of the other things I want to talk about, we'll do it in the next hour, is, and I touched on this just briefly yesterday, there was a story from, I think it was Florida, where there was a steakhouse that ordered, well, no, it was a church that ordered a bunch of food from a steakhouse, and then it was like $750 worth of food, and then when it got delivered, they didn't tip, and the waitress or the person who was organizing the delivery went on Facebook and popped off about the church not tipping, and that created a whole big controversy, and she ended up getting fired. So I want to talk about that and a little bit about tipping. Also, it's a glorious day. Pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training in Jupiter, Florida. Chris Raby is down there. I'm jealous. A lot of people are jealous. He'll rub it in how warm it is, and he'll join us at 3:35 this afternoon. I am joined this afternoon by Missouri State Representative David Gregory from South County, who has taken a look at the state budget and found some interesting things when it comes to potential savings. Representative Gregory, how are you? Welcome to KMOX.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I was unfamiliar with you, so tell me a little bit about where your district is in South County.
Yeah, so I've got Sunset Hills South all the way down to about 55 and 270. So I've got the Lindbergh School District, most of Melville School District, and some of Rockwood School Districts.
All right, so if I live where I do, and this is pleading ignorance because I just moved, so that's my excuse for not knowing my state rep. You might be my state rep. Let's test it out here. Right around 44 and 141, would that be you?
Very close. I don't go quite that far. I go, the furthest west I go is Bulls, so I don't think I'm your state representative.
Okay, just checking. Wanted to make sure. I have no idea who it is. I got to find that out. In the meantime, let's talk about what you did here. Did you take this upon yourself to kind of look at the Department of Revenue and what was happening to the money?
Yeah. You know what I did? It was one of the biggest reasons I wanted to get elected. I just feel like we're constantly trying to raise taxes, and I don't want to raise taxes. I want to lower taxes, and I want to help more people doing it. So I wanted to tackle the issue of government waste, if you will, and I did.
How did you do that? How'd you go about that?
So I was a risk recovery auditor before I went to law school, and one of the things we did is I was part of a team that would go into these Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies, and we'd find ways to save money. I want to do that exact same thing at the state level. So I had to make some adjustments because, of course, the state, or in this case, the Department of Revenue, is not the exact same as a corporation, but there are a lot of parallels. There are a lot of transferable strategies, and I used those by benchmarking to other competitors, or in this situation, other states, departments of revenue, and it's exposed some key areas of concern, which I honed in on, started interviewing employees and managers, and got to my preliminary observations.
How did you decide what states were perhaps good comparisons or good comps, if you will?
Yeah, that's where those benchmarks come in. So you start looking at key drivers of each department of revenue, and of course the greatest one is how many revenues can we collect per FTE or per employee. Things like those are benchmark data that you start to look at and say, wow, look at these states. Their Department of Revenue collects X amount of billions of dollars with this many employees. Why can't we? And so you really start to hone in on key areas of concern.
All right. So what were the key areas that you kind of uncovered here? And if you do the math, it's about $36 million that you think we could potentially save.
Absolutely. You know, as I benchmarked, I noticed Indiana probably has one of the strongest departments of revenue. And so after that, I started studying Indiana. How do they do it? And they do it they collect more money with 300 less employees than we do. So that's where I started, and that's where I started drilling down. And of course, with the Department of Revenue, you've kind of got the revenue side too. So I looked and found ways that we can increase the revenues we collect by adding certain employees. And then, of course, I looked at ways that we can reduce the amount of employees and still operate just as efficiently or greater.
So this only focuses, though, on the actual Department of Revenue. I mean, it doesn't really cover any other departments in the state, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I bring that up because it makes you wonder, if you did this for every other department, how much savings could you potentially uncover? And is this something, so you delivered this morning to the House Budget Committee. Is this something that you think will effectively be followed up on to the point where maybe some of these recommendations are taken under consideration and implemented for how to save this money?
You know what I do? I'm pretty optimistic. I actually have gotten a tremendous amount of support from the House Budget Committee. As a matter of fact, unanimously so far, I have not met with a single person, both on the record and off the record, that that doesn't fully support this initiative and wants to help see this through to the end.
So let's go through a couple of things, and you broadly covered them a few minutes ago, but you say that one way to save money is evaluate employee duplications, but you're also saying maybe hire some people where you can focus on tax evasion and things like that. The state, according to your report, could save $375,000 by implementing a centralized training program for discrimination, harassment, and diversity instead of the current policy of every department hiring employees to do the same work. Sounds like a good idea. The Department of Revenue could lower expenses by reducing excessive supply and equipment costs. That's probably the case across the board, I'm guessing, when it comes to supply and equipment. Is there anything in particular? Is it paper? Is it printers? What is it?
Yeah, well, there were four main areas I actually keyed in on. So what I did was I took a look at the quarterly spending trends of each quarter. And what you look for in government is that often if you don't use it, you'll lose it at the end of the year. So you look at that fourth quarter spending trend and you say, hey, is there a big spike here? Are they excessively spending more in the fourth quarter than they did the other three quarters? And I was able to find three or four areas of concern that that I keyed in on and realized there were some big spikes in spending. So that came down to about $900,000.
And this last one that I'm going to mention is a little confusing to those of us who are outside of how the state does business. Reconsider state discounts given to businesses when they remit sales taxes. So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so this is actually a big part of Governor Greitens' tax plan and initiative. So here's what happens. When we go into a retailer, let's say a grocery store, and we buy groceries, we pay for the groceries and we pay the additional sales tax. Well, that grocery store has to turn around and remit those sales taxes to the state within 30 days. If they pay those sales taxes on time within 30 days, they get a discount. They get a 2% discount. And right now that equals about $115 million a year. So the question becomes, is this discount something we want to continue implementing? And if so, to what extent?
Yeah, so the question there would be, are you going to end up on the losing end of that deal if you don't offer the incentive and then people are going to delay paying those taxes and you end up in a worse situation?
Yep, that was part of my presentation. Quite frankly, sir, I find it constitutionally offensive to try to get companies, private entities,
to pay their bills.
To perform a to perform a government function without compensation. It's just not right. So I'm a believer that we calculate the exact cost it is for these retailers to do our function of collecting taxes, and then we make sure they get reimbursed accordingly.
So I think on the one hand, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but let me toss this out there. $36 million that you uncovered here, I think these things are important. But I could see people saying in the whole scheme of things, what are you looking at? What, $25 billion budget for the state of Missouri, something like that?
Yeah, 27 to 30 billion. That's with federal funding. We've got about a 10 to 11 billion dollar general revenue fund.
All right, so you know, even if you're in the 27, 28 billion mark, 37 million drop in the bucket. That I'm sensing some people might say that this is small potatoes.
You know what? Thankfully, most people understood. So the Department of Revenue is only a $76 million a year budget. So to find 36 million out of 76 million, that's what, a 30 to 40% finding. I mean, you do the math. Over a $10 to $11 billion general revenue budget, that's billions in potential savings.
Never ask a radio host to do math. It's a little...
my apologies.
A little tip there. State Representative David Gregory. So what's the next step here before I let you go? Just handing it off to the House Budget Committee and see what they can do?
You know what? Several of my colleagues want to support me in this. So we've got to drill down, get the final data, get final conclusions before we present them as recommendations, and then we want to see it through. The Chairman Fitzpatrick's very supportive. I'm pretty excited. I'm also going to be presenting to the Senate budget and making sure they're on board as well.
All right, David Gregory, State Rep, South County, Sunset Hills, and beyond. I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon. Keep us posted.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'd like to see somebody do that for the rest of the state government. You know, because we're told, look, if you get $37 million there, you get another $37 million somewhere else, you get another $37 million somewhere else, it certainly can add up and defer the cost of these cuts that we hear about that the governor's budget is trying to enforce. So I think this is always a good thing to look at how the money's spent. It's 2:31 at KMOX. Look, I, as you know, I am a fan of law enforcement. I will take the side of law enforcement in most cases. But what they uncovered in Baltimore with corruption in the police department is rather stunning. And I'm going to bring that information to you next on KMOX. You know, I mentioned this before the break. I would often side with law enforcement and have in some of the most high-profile cases that have come across the news in the past few years, including and starting with Mike Brown in Ferguson. Of course, they had the Freddie Gray case out there in Baltimore. But a federal jury yesterday convicted two Baltimore cops, some detectives, for their roles in really one of the biggest police corruption scandals in the city history. And it's quite amazing, some of the details here. Jean Marbella is a Baltimore Sun reporter, has covered this. She's joining me this afternoon. Jean, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. So this is some pretty in-depth, serious corruption going on in Baltimore, wasn't it?
It was staggering. Both the amount of robberies and corruption that were alleged and, you know, they were found guilty of, and the brazenness, I think, of it.
How did this all get uncovered? Before we get to some of the details here of what they did, but how did this come about?
You know, it really was almost happenstance. It started, if I'm remembering right, with a drug overdose of someone in one of the counties to the north of Baltimore. And in trying to find where those drugs came from, they targeted a particular dealer. And from that led to some officers who had been working with this dealer.
Yeah, so one of the examples was, and I guess the dealers were given some immunity for this, but these cops, and I guess they were just kind of teaming up on some of the stuff. Mark Taylor, Daniel Herschel. Daniel is 48 years old. Mark Taylor is 31 years old. Guilty of racketeering conspiracy and robbery. And what they would do, and I guess this may be part of the pattern, you tell me, they went into a drug dealer's house, they handcuffed him, they took his keys, they found his safe in the basement, they found $200,000 in the safe. They take $100,000, split it amongst themselves, and then they return the rest of the safe, then they film a video saying, hey, look what we found, $100,000. That video was actually played for jurors, but this was, again, just part of a pattern where Herschel was also charged with taking part in a robbery of $20,000 from another home after a man and his wife were detained without having committed a crime. So this went on for quite some time as well?
Yes, it did. And often they targeted people who they suspected of being drug dealers, had drug convictions in their past. And other times it was almost just random street robberies. You know, they would see someone walking down the street with a book bag and they thought he looked suspicious and they would shake him down. And, you know, often they would find whatever, a couple hundred dollars on him. They would say, you're under arrest, we're confiscating, you know, these drug proceeds. And then they would hand in just a portion of it and keep the rest for themselves.
Well, you know, that begs the question, and I'm sure that everybody thinks this, especially if you don't like the police very much, how often does this happen elsewhere and across the country? I think it does happen on a, you know, certainly a smaller scale and a smaller degree. You know what it reminds me of? Have you ever seen, Gene, the documentary? I think it was on Showtime. They're making it into a feature film called The 7-5 about the 75th Precinct in New York City.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was about this guy, Michael Dowd. Now, his level of corruption was very different, but he was a cop in the 1980s. And I mean, some of the things that he did, it is an amazing documentary. And he's very cavalier and almost proud of himself, the way that he would rip people off. And some of the same things where he'd go into houses of perps or apartments when they're about to make an arrest. If there's money in there, you grab as much money as you can and say, oh, look, here's what they have left. And that was something that was somewhat common. In this particular situation in Baltimore, these two cops found guilty. They're obviously facing a lot of time behind bars. But there's a bunch of other cops that have pled guilty to some of these related charges, haven't there?
Yes. There were eight members of this elite unit in the Baltimore Police Department called the Gun Trace Task Force. And let me see, there were eight of them that were indicted, six pled guilty, and of those six, four turned to, you know, turned in some testimony in the hopes of reducing their sentence. None of them have been sentenced yet. So four officers came and testified against their ex-colleagues, I guess. And it was, you know, just even seeing them walking into the courtroom in orange prison jumpsuits was just an amazing sight.
Have there been people defending these officers?
Yes. Daniel Herschel's brother, after the conviction yesterday, really let loose, to the reporters that were gathered there. And he claimed that his brother was part of this unit, but as soon as he learned it was dirty, he tried to get out of it, and he was almost transferred out of it, but then the indictments came down.
But even the police union basically agreed that they were given due process, they got their day in court, the jury made a decision, and the evidence was there for convictions.
Yes, yes. And again, you know, six of them pled guilty without even going to trial. These other two decided, I guess, to roll the dice and see if they could get off, but, you know, they didn't.
Is there or was there a bit of vindication for Marilyn Mosby? Those of us out here in the middle of the country and elsewhere, of course, followed what happened in the Freddie Gray case, and that was not her shining moment.
Right, right. Not exactly in that these indictments were handed down federally, and she's the state prosecutor.
That's true. Okay.
So, yeah, but, you know, she's been dealing with the fallout from this because I think more than 100 cases, 100, you know, criminal cases had to be dropped because the witnesses were the arresting officer in those more than 100 cases was one of the officers charged in this case.
Yeah, that's
so
a lot of cases, right?
Put him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't put him on the stand because, you know, the attorney, the defense attorney would be, well, you lied in this case. Why should we believe you now?
When is the sentencing for these guys?
You know, it's unclear. At the end of a court yesterday, they said they would discuss among themselves when to determine the sentencing, but that hasn't been released yet.
Jean Marbella from the Baltimore Sun, interesting case. I appreciate coming on here this afternoon.
Thank you for your interest.
I thought it was interesting. One of the attorneys for this guy, this is how he's kind of parsing out the language of it all. William Perpur is his name, and this is what these guys, I guess, are paid to do. He conceded during the trial that Herschel, the one officer, there's two officers involved here that I mentioned, Daniel Herschel, who's the older officer, and Marcus Taylor. He said Herschel took money in some cases. He admitted that. But as a law enforcement officer, Herschel was authorized to seize money if he believed he had probable cause, and that any money later pocketed was not robbery. He was charged with robbery, so that was one of the allegations here. And in fact, that's what he was convicted of. It was racketeering, conspiracy, robbery, also racketeering. The argument he made to the jury was that it was theft or receiving stolen goods. It wasn't robbery because he had the right to take the money. Wow. Interesting. By the way, watch that movie, The 7-5. It's up on Netflix right now. It is amazing. We got to take a break. We're coming back with more in a moment on KMOX. And here's what's on tap this afternoon, sponsored by the Butterfly House at Faust Park in Chesterfield. Another heartbreaking story about an immigrant that is going to get deported in this country. However, as Paul Harvey, you say, wait till you hear the rest of the story. That's coming up.
On Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX. He's on your radio now. Mark Reardon on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
How about this story? Abby Beckley is this woman's name from Oregon, Grants Pass, Oregon. She was 26 a year and a half ago. There's an update on this, but she felt something prickling in her left eye. So she goes in front of a mirror and this is so creepy when you think about it. She pulls out a small white worm from the surface of her eyeball. I've never heard of eye worms. Heard of earworms, never heard of eye worms before. This was August of 2016. Beckley, she was spending her summer on a fishing boat in Alaska. She says, that morning I was so frustrated because I had this irritant in my eye for about 5 days. So she said, I'm going to try to get whatever the heck is in my eye out of there. She plucks at her eyeball. She pulls out a worm. She says she's in shock. It was a wriggling white worm on her finger. It lived for about 5 seconds, and then it died. And she said, well, what the hell did I just see? She goes to her roommate and says, this is a worm, right? And she thought maybe it, you know, fell into her eye from the salmon that she was fishing. But then, this is where it gets even creepier, she pulls out a bunch more worms. She's like 14. They're called cattle worms on her left eye. And the Oregon Health and Science University infectious disease specialist, Dr. Aaron Bernard, got involved and said, well, here's the call she gets. She gets a call from somebody that says, hey, her boyfriend's dad is a physician. He says, my son's girlfriend has worms in her eye. What should we do? So they, you know, told her to go to the doctor, a local doctor at the time, be tested. They fly out. Actually, they fly down and they meet her. And they don't even know what it is. They say it's uncommon to have worms in the eye. God, I hope so, right? So then they go to the Centers for Disease Control, and they are Thalassia gullosa. No idea if I'm pronouncing that accurately, but it's a parasite that usually is found on cow eyeballs. They've never found it in humans before, and they've written, you know, they always do these reports for journals and stuff like that. And once, by the way, this is what's even weirder, they think that she got it because she was walking through cattle pastures. But a lot of people do that, right? That's pretty common. Once the worm was identified, they couldn't do much because killing the parasites would leave them in the eye. So they couldn't kill the ones that were still in the eye because they'd die and they'd stay in the eye. But that's just a weird story. And it kind of freaks me out. I'm just going to tell you. It should freak you out too. Then there's this story. This will perhaps come as no surprise, and I'm going to try to get to this here before the end of the hour. There have been all these touchy-feely, heartbreaking stories about immigrants, illegal immigrants who have been in this country perhaps for a long time, decades, that are now facing deportation because ICE is cracking down, right? So there's a woman in Minnesota, and the local CBS station up there did a story on this, a lot of media attention, because she says she's being targeted by ICE, her family, because she's standing up for immigrants' rights. Keep in mind, again, there's a difference between illegal and legal immigration. That always seems to get left, you know, and lost in the discussion. So last month, Louis Candela Gonzalez was taken into custody. His attorney says that Candela came to the U.S. illegally, but they believe that he was targeted for arrest because his wife, Sandra, was featured in newspaper articles standing up for the illegal immigrants' rights. I'm going to toss in the word illegal there, just to be more accurate. ICE says that they make arrests based on the threat that someone is maybe to security. Candela's attorney says he did enter the country illegally. He's a father of three. He's not a threatening person. However, here's something that you won't hear. Now, there was a quick mention in that television story, and apparently the Star Tribune, the newspaper up in Minneapolis, did give passing coverage to this particular little factoid, which I think is somewhat important. ICE was already looking into Candela Gonzalez over his involvement with an immigrant activist group known to provide shelter and safety to illegals from authorities. There was an intersection of ICE interest between the spouses, however, when Sandra Gonzaga Perez got into her, quote, activist work, which apparently took the form of filing complaints against the manager of the trailer park where they live. In the fall, Candela Gonzalez's wife, Sandra Gonzaga Perez, filed a complaint with the Department of Human Rights saying a manager at New Brighton's Oak Grove Mobile Home Park reported residents to ICE, leading to a string of immigration arrests last year. Allegations that the park's management has denied. By the way, if they're making immigration arrests, they're making arrests of illegal immigrants, not legal immigrants. So she was apparently complaining that the park manager, learning that there were illegal immigrants, can't say aliens anymore, residing on the property, actually followed the law and did what they were supposed to do. So now the husband and the wife are on the radar because of that report. So the report on the television station in Minnesota describes him as being on, quote, the right track in life, generally doing the right thing. There's a fleeting mention of a burglary, but there were some details that were left out. So this guy was convicted of felony burglary of a vehicle in Kansas under a different name. He served 7 months behind bars. Because of that, just that case alone makes him a candidate for the attention of immigration enforcement. Also, you know, I mentioned it was a different name. Like many illegals, he was engaged in identity theft. That's confirmed by another incident where he was found to have been working in Arden Hills, Minnesota, using someone else's Social Security numbers. So here you have another one of those situations. You got the wife out there talking to the newspapers, the media, anyone that wants to hear, you know, her speak, because he's just being targeted unfairly because she's an activist. Sounds terrible. Sounds heartbreaking. Sounds unfair, doesn't it? But when you come to find out all this additional information that both of them have been attempting to thwart law enforcement by sheltering illegal aliens from the law, which, by the way, that's also a felony, and trying to make trouble for people who may want to enforce those laws, and, of course, the details of the criminal behavior in the past, and maybe that sheds a little bit more light onto the touchy-feely illegal immigrant discussion and story in Minneapolis. Second hour of the show coming up. Hang in there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.